West Kent today. West Kent Radio. John Butt.
And welcome along to West Kent Today with me, John Butt. Two guests this morning, Leonora Langley in the first hour, Phil Thorne in the second. With me this morning, we've got Leonora Langley, who has written a book called Let the Souls of Our Children Sing. Leonora, welcome.
Lovely to be here, John.
Tell me about yourself.
Okay. Well, I think I've had quite an extraordinary life, an unusual life. In my 20s, I qualified as a teacher, and I love the communication with the children, but I found the system a little bit oppressive, to say the least, at that time in my life. And I did 3 years, really happy in some respects, but I wanted to spread my wings a little bit. So I had the opportunity to be a journalist in London to learn the trade through a magazine that my sister had started. And so I freelanced for 6 years, had an amazing time. And because I'm interested in the human condition, that's run through my life like a rich tapestry, I became very interested in interviewing people, and obviously that led me to celebrity interviews, because that's what people want to hear about, celebrities' lives. But I was really interested in finding out about what made them tick psychologically. And then I had the opportunity to go to Los Angeles on an assignment and was very taken with the entrepreneurial spirit of that part of the world at that time. I was determined to find a niche for myself there. But it wasn't possible because I had a lot of commitments back home in London. So I went home, sorted a few things out, and went back on a second assignment 6 months later, and then didn't return to the UK for 4 years.
Wow.
So that was quite an extraordinary time in my life. I linked up with a friend who'd been working with The Hollywood Reporter on the design side, and she said, I think they're looking for somebody to do a small supplement for the weekends, a lifestyle supplement. So I thought that's a good opportunity. I went in on a part-time basis, but gradually the supplement became quite popular and it grew from 8 pages to 16 to 24, etc. And then they spun it off into its own freestanding lifestyle magazine. And then I was in full-time employment with them for 4 years. It was, my feet really barely touched the ground, to be honest with you. I was in an environment that was beautiful in terms of the weather, the scenery. It was totally different from London. And I was taking it all in, imbibing it, you know, in a big way. And then, sadly, I left the Hollywood Reporter because my boss decided to sell up to the Boston Globe after 60 years in the family. And then I luckily had a contact from the Hollywood Reporter who'd gone over to work in New York for Hachette, who owned Elle magazine, and they offered me a job as the first West Coast editor of Elle, which was also an amazing job. So 7 years in Hollywood, it was a life-changing experience. I reached what I think you might call self-actualization. I was challenged every day of my life in some way or other. I was out of my comfort zone. And I think that teaches you so much about yourself and your own resource. So that was a really amazing phase of my life. But then I decided I wanted a family, and I decided to come back to England and raise my son, who was born in Los Angeles, and when he was about 3, I returned to teaching. I'd sort of, that was the end of the chapter of my life as a journalist. I'd achieved so much, I'd interviewed so many interesting people in both the business world and the celebrity world, and I decided that my son needed nurturing. I didn't want to give him the crumbs of life, and I went back to teaching on a part-time basis to start with, and then became a supply teacher for many years. And we found that really worked, you know, But then I decided I wanted to learn more about the human condition. So over a 10-year period, I qualified as a counsellor and psychotherapist.
Right. Well, we're going to come on to that in a few minutes, because we're going to link it in with your book, Let the Souls of the Children Sing, because it's all about the mental welfare of children. So take us up to that. Here's Tommy James and the Shondells and Money Money. Tommy James and the Shondells and Money Money. Now, if you've got a question at all this morning for Leonora, email me at studio@westkentradio.co.uk. Leonora Langley is with me this morning, and we're going to be talking about her book, Let the Souls of the Children Sing. So what's the motivation and the reason behind the book?
Ever since I was a young girl, John, I had a feeling that I wanted to write a book like this. It was sort of innate within me. I was feeling that maybe children don't always have a voice in our society. And so that was seeded quite young in me. But it wasn't until I became a teacher in my 20s on my first teaching practice with a group of 6 to 7 year olds that I really did experience their vulnerability. They were virtually at the mercy, I felt, of their parents and teachers, and yet they didn't seem to always have a voice. But it was for many decades later, it took me many decades later, for me actually to put pen to paper, because I felt this is quite a brave subject to broach, and I wanted to be as expert as I could be on so many different levels. So I was a teacher for 30 years, a counsellor for 15, and then, of course, being a parent changes you tremendously. There's nothing like first-hand experience. And I think when you have a child, you kind of relive your own childhood. You want it to be better for them in so many ways. But it's not a perfect world. We can only do the best we can at any given moment. But I think the purpose of the book really was to raise people's consciousness about how we parent and how we teach. I think now that mainstream education in so many ways has become an exam factory, and to the detriment of children's souls, their emotional development, I think it's a bit lopsided. Dostoevsky, the famous Russian writer and philosopher, said that he felt that his academic life was only 1/20th of who he was. So it makes you wonder what happens to the other 19/20ths when we're at school. So I just feel there needs to be a better balance between the arts and the sciences, less emphasis on cognition and logic, which can be counted and measured, and much more on the elusive stuff, the emotional well-being, the mental state of our children, and the journey that they take. We all take a soul's journey from the beginning to the end of our lives. So these were the kind of areas I was interested in exploring.
I think the education system, as I experienced it, you're right, is exam top-heavy. And there are quite a few of us who do not cope well under exam conditions. It's all to do with memory. And I'm dyspraxic, so nobody can read my writing, which can be quite useful at times. But I'm sure that I failed because people just didn't know what I read. It may have helped if I went to school a few times as well, but I got so fed up not being taught. We had one master who just dictated notes, but there was no sort of understanding of what was things behind it. And being dyspraxic, you obviously get accused of being clumsy and things like that. So trying to do woodwork, metalwork, technical drawing was a complete and utter waste of time. So in some respect, I don't think I feel failed by the education system, but I don't think they understand. Whether they do today or not, I don't know. Should we come back to that in a couple of minutes?
Love to.
West Kent Radio. Think you need medical help right now and you're not sure what to do?
21 Reasons, Nathan Doyle featuring Ella Henderson here on West Kent Today, 95.5, 106.7 FM, online, on your smart speaker, via Morse code, semaphore, whatever way you want to pick. We're introducing two tin cans and a piece of string for those who don't have any joy with technology. With me this morning, Leonora Langley, and we're going to be talking now about the summer holidays, which are rapidly approaching. Schools break up this week. Some schools broke up last week. But summer holidays are going to present some real challenges for people.
I think particularly this year, John, because quite a few parents and carers might be experiencing, you know, sort of panicked flashbacks to lockdown, remembering the school closures and the prospect of bored children, which is always a problem in the summer, especially if the parents have to work and have to juggle running a house and keeping the kids entertained. So I think every family will have a different perspective on school holidays this summer. There will be some jetting off probably to tropical climes for a couple of weeks. Others might be having a staycation. And then there will be some others who simply can't afford to have a holiday away from home. But I think whatever plans parents and carers might have, they probably need to be aware that their children are better with some kind of structure and sticking to a predictable routine, especially those suffering from anxiety and stress, which I feel now is probably the majority of children.
Why do children feel stressed?
I think it all starts way back at the time of conception, the relationship between the parents, the vibration that the child feels inside the womb from the mother. Maybe some nice things would be exposure to classical music to soothe the child. Because I do think that, you know, they can hear a lot of things. We think that life begins as soon as a child, you know, comes into the world. But I think it happens even further back. So that definitely the relationship between the parents matters a lot. So we want to try and avoid conflict if possible. And then I think the first 18 months of being outside the womb, when they're still in a relative womb-like state, matters a lot too. I feel that it needs to be nurturing as possible. There needs to be attachment forming between the mother and the child. The bonding that takes place is vitally important. And if that doesn't happen, children can experience what are called ACEs, which are adverse negative reactions to life. And, you know, that first 18 months, in my opinion, is absolutely vital to the emotional stability of a child.
Well, circumstances today, it takes me back to the early 80s when I became a parent, and we were in raging inflation, mortgage kept going up, and coping to make ends meet. Now, that sort of stress is back with people today, and that has an effect, a knock-on effect on the children, because they see their parents really stressed. How are we going to eat? Now, I don't remember food banks when I was younger. Now, there are ways and means, but it is still not ideal. So these additional stresses, plus holidays, can we afford to go out? You know, go swimming in one of the local pools costs a few quid. And if you haven't got that few quid, what are they going to do? My childhood was great because we could just go run wild across the fields and, you know, we didn't have worries about that. These days people are more security conscious, I'm not sure that's right, or concerned.
Of course. You know, health and safety has become quite a big issue, hasn't it, everywhere. Yeah. My sister, for instance, I remember her always running down to the woods, you know, on many occasions, quite free, and away from parental, not protection, but You know, we all need a certain amount of freedom and autonomy in life, because that's how we learn independence later on. So it has to be a balance, really. I do think that parents have been under tremendous stress just putting food on the table for children, keeping a roof over children's heads. It's enormously stressful for parents. But if they can try and realise that unless the parent is an emotional anchor for the child, that children later on will feel a bit rudderless. So, you know, it's not really materialism that I think children need. I think it's to know that they're loved unconditionally, that they are loved simply because they exist. So a lot of parents want to hothouse their kids and give them everything. But actually, children actually thrive on very little as long as they're given love, that unconditional love from the get-go, I think is the most important thing. I think in terms of these holidays coming up, I think it's useful for parents to break the 6 weeks down into manageable bite-sized chunks, sort of planning ahead with the use of a wall planner. I used to put a big wall planner up in the kitchen to highlight some of the fun activities and outings that I'd planned for my son, which can provide positive reinforcement. And I think as a part of this, it might be useful for parents to choose two or three positive behaviours for their children that they'd like to encourage and try to ignore as many of the negative ones as possible. And of course, you know, parenting works both ways. It can be a good time for parents to look at their own behaviour to help improve their communication with their children, particularly in their choice of language and the tone of their voice. I had three particular devices, language devices, that I learnt to help with the relationship with my son. The first is, I think, to avoid expressing what you don't want and emphasise what you do want. It's also about using you and I statements to create a different emotional and behavioural reaction. If you say to a child, you need to do this, for instance, it implies that the child is personally responsible for something that can trigger feelings of blame, criticism and shame. But when you use the I statement, it's a more positive way for the parent to share feelings in a non-blaming, non-critical and non-shaming way. This gives the child more of an idea of what is expected of them and puts greater responsibility on them to change. And the third language device that I think is useful is to use yes and statements rather than yes but statements. So if a child asks a parent if some friends can come round, rather than saying yes but try not to make a mess, it's probably better to say something like, yes, that's fine and everyone can clear up afterwards.
So it's just reframing.
It is. Yeah, you see, a yes statement can cause confusion. A yes but statement can cause confusion for a child because the parent has given an affirmation, something positive, followed by an injunction. You know, they're saying, no, you can do this, but you can't do it. And that confuses the child. Mm. So a yes and statement builds on what has been said by the parent as like an accepted truth, and it prompts the child to feel more involved. It allows negotiation, collaboration, and it's much more of an effective form of communication.
Well, we'll come back to that. We're going to have a little bit of a chat while Taylor Swift is singing about my ankle measurement. 22. Ooh. Dermot Kennedy, Something to Someone. With me this morning is Leonora Langley. She's written a book called Let the Souls of Our Children Sing, Letting the Inner Voice Come Out. Now, one of the pressures that we all have, but particularly young people at the moment, is that through social media. Leonora, tell us about your take on that.
Well, it's definitely we're in the age of this double-edged sword of social media. I think on some levels it's a good way to communicate, to get to know other people, especially overseas. You know, it's building up empathy, maybe more consideration towards others, more compassion. But I think on the whole, I think that most people feel that it can't be healthy for our children to spend 2 or 3 hours on a daily basis looking at photos and videos. I think it dumbs them down. I think it desensitizes them. I think it also can evoke hyperstimulation. And therefore, they're always on kind of this red alert instead of learning how to relax and finding an inner life. So I think it, particularly in the holidays, one of the greatest challenges for parents and carers is trying to keep their children away from the screen and hopefully taking them more outdoors, possibly going on a nature walk, or experiencing walking through a forest, which they call forest bathing. This is such a precious time, I think, for peace, tranquility, and inspiration. So at the moment, I think social media encourages external validation. You know, children can become intoxicated by the world of celebrity, and they feel inadequate in their small lives. But I think they need to be encouraged to have a richer interior life, you know, more in touch with their internet rather than, you know, the internet as we know it. Because if children don't learn to have an inner life, I think they don't have the resources later on when they're challenged. Life is all about inevitable challenge and adversity. Unless we instill that and nurture it in children when they're very young, they simply don't know how to cope with adversity so readily. So I feel quite strongly about social media. In fact, I devoted the whole of my introduction of my book to that very subject. I think it's really important that children learn that an ordinary life is just as important as trying to strive for an extraordinary life. You know, just to be a human being rather than the human doing, which is what happens at schools. You know, it's so pressurized. They're in such a pressure pot of being, well, it's competitive. They're being tested, over-tested, over-homeworked. And they just don't have these opportunities to just be and discover an inner life. So, yeah, it's a subject that I feel really, really strongly about. But, of course, I use it because that's the way I promote my book, so I can't condemn it wholly. You know, it has been very useful to me. And we just need a bit more of a balance, I suppose.
I'll come to that and how people can get hold of your book after we've heard from Kenny Thomas. And he's thinking about your love. Kenny Thomas and Thinking About Your Love here on West Kent Today on West Kent Radio. Leonora Lang is with me at the moment, and we've been talking about sort of issues facing parents with the summer holidays coming up. And we're now going to move on now to, I think you just called intentional conversations.
Yes. You know, on an emotional level, John, we all know that the last 2 years have been extremely traumatic and unsettling for everyone. So we need to be more sensitive to mental health issues, probably more than ever. So I think it can be useful for parents and carers to be mindful of setting aside times for these intentional conversations with their children, where they're actively listening to them and giving them an opportunity to reflect back how they're feeling. I mentioned earlier that I think a huge part of being a good enough parent is to be an emotional anchor. Children now are suffering more stress and anxiety, I think, than ever. So I find some good ways of dealing with it can be a simple stress ball, breathing and yoga techniques, meditation, as well as what's called EFT, emotional freedom technique, which involves tapping on the body's energy meridians to dampen down the amygdala in the brain and help children to get in touch with their inner life, their inner thoughts and feelings. Encouraging children, I think, to write down their worries and put them into a box, a jar or an envelope can be really helpful, or in fact to create a specific calm jar, like a homemade snow globe using water and glitter, easily made, which can reduce anxiety. So the child shakes the jar and watches the glitter go to the bottom, which can be really calming. And younger children can also benefit from having a worry doll. It can be homemade, or you can go out and buy a small doll to share their worries with. And the child places it under their pillow before they go to sleep. And by the morning, the doll has usually helped them to overcome their worries. That sort of thing might sound very simplistic, but it really does help children if they can share these worries and anxious moments that we all have.
And it works.
I think they do. You know, Mind recommend quite a few of these things, and I'm very in touch with the philosophy of Mind. So we have to keep trying things that work for us, don't we? The relationship, the special relationship we have with our own children. It has to keep being tweaked. None of us gets it right. We all have moments of guilt where we're feeling we're not being good enough. But we must forgive ourselves. We are, after all, only human. And as long as we're doing the best we possibly can, that's good enough.
Yes. And don't beat ourselves up about it.
That's right.
If we can bring smiles to children's faces.
That's, I think a bit of humour goes so far.
Yeah. So tell me how people can get hold of your book.
So it's available from all good bookshops in paperback, from Amazon and Austin Macaulay, my publishers, in paperback and ebook, at a very reasonable price, as I wanted to make it accessible to everyone. All my radio interviews on a wide range of subjects covered in my book are available to listen to on Facebook and YouTube.
Lots of different ways to get hold of the book. And thank you very much for coming in.
An absolute pleasure, John. Really lovely to meet you. You've got a great sense of humour. And I really, really... It's such a refreshing thing to meet somebody who can look at life in a lighter way. You know, in many ways, maybe it's a bit of an illusion. So if we can just find the lovely things of life, the pleasurable things of life, the things that bring us inspiration, creativity, and allow us to dream, then I think we're doing well.
That sounds an excellent point to end on. So thank you, Leonora. Your book is entitled Let the Souls of Our Children Sing. And I look forward to reading it, because you give me a copy. It's very nice.